Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this call. My name is Robert Helms, host of the Real Estate Guys radio program. And unlike a radio show, today is completely different. We have a couple of topics we want to cover and a couple of amazing guests. The Real Estate Guys, as you know, talk about real estate every week. But before you're a real estate investor, you're an investor. You want a return on your hard-earned money. And many people look to real estate as a great asset class, if you will. But for the Real Estate Guys, we often talk at the bigger, broader picture economic level because there's so much that affects the dollar and the rest of the world. And today especially, if you saw our email newsletter that went out just a few days ago, there's a big story developing. And I guess the premise of our call today is this the signal that we're at the end of the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency? And that's kind of a big topic, and there's a lot in there. And we're going to talk today about what a real estate investor can do about that. But the first thing is just awareness and understanding what all of that means. Why is the dollar the reserve currency? It has a lot to do with oil, actually. And we'll get a little bit of background on that from our guests today, and then we'll just have an open discussion. So we're very fortunate to have two of our favorite guys hanging out with us today. The way Russ and I have figured out how to navigate a lot of our investment life is by always getting around people who are smarter than us, finding people who really know their space and are doing the thing, not just out there booking, you know, selling books, seminars, that kind of thing, but really paying attention. And both of our guests today certainly qualify for that. I think we'll start by introducing you to Mr. Chris Martinson. He's an economic researcher and futurist who specializes in energy and resource depletion. You may know Chris as being the founder of Peak Prosperity. He and Adam Taggart wrote an amazing book called Prosper, which will be your first homework assignment. If you've not read Prosper, you'll want to get that for sure. Chris is actually a scientist by training, but he holds a PhD from Duke and an MBA from Cornell, and he's just a great friend, an amazing guy. Let's say hello to Chris Martinson. Hey, Chris.
Well, hey, hello, Robert and Russ. It's great to be back with you guys. Had a wonderful time and Summit at Sea with y'all, and really looking forward to today's conversation.
Yeah, we were so blessed to have you and Adam join us for the first few days of our summit. You had your big annual event right afterwards, but you carved out some time, which we're still in awe of, and had an amazing time. And I guess maybe to start, Chris, the context of this, let's talk about your emphasis on what you call the three E's.
Sure. You know, I was watching my portfolio just get shredded like everybody in 2000, 2001, I started getting curious, mostly, you know, if you wanted to understand me, that's who I am. I'm a curious guy. I love data. I love telling stories. So I started scratching it. The first E in this story, the economy, started finding things that made me a little nervous about how money was created and the levels of debt and liabilities in the United States. And I said, wow, this is a big story. I started sharing that with people. And then I came across a second E in this story, which is energy. Specifically oil, and there's a really big story there to tell, and it's about how it's just getting harder and harder to get oil out of the ground. Not that it's running out, but if you understand, we run everything in our economy on the extra, the surplus oil that's left over after you've used some to go and find oil. Big story there. I put those two pieces together, and I started to say, uh-oh. And then the 30 in this story is the environment, ecology. It's the waste we're putting back in, the things we're taking out, looking at non-renewable natural resources or even renewable resources that are being exploited too quickly, fresh water from aquifers, soils in the Midwest, things like that. You put all three of these E's together, and I have a large story to tell. It's in something called the Crash Course, and it says this: big change is coming, and most people aren't ready for it. And so I made my life's work about helping people first understand that, and secondarily understand what they can do about the story once they wrap their head around the implications.
Great stuff. And just so you know, folks listening in today, every reference that we talk about today, we're going to make available to you guys just by sending an email. So we have nothing to sell you today. There's no big upsell to a program or a course or any of that kind of stuff. These two guys have just donated their time today to talk about this. And the Crash Course, for instance, an amazing body of work, a great video series. It's available, and we'll show you how you can get that before we're done. So all the things that that Chris and Brian mentioned today, we'll make sure we have a link to. So, Chris, obviously you have your mind pretty firmly about around energy, and you know, I bet there's a whole bunch of folks listening who don't even understand the petrodollar system, this idea that oil gets settled in U.S. dollars. Can you help us understand that?
Well, sure. You know, the United States came off the gold standard on August 15, 1971. Brian will be able to tell you a lot more about that. But that, you know, it had to be replaced with something. And it had a brilliant, if not evilly brilliant, kind of guy named Kissinger who engineered something called the petrodollar system. And it was originally an agreement with Saudi Arabia that, hey, Saudi Arabia, here's the deal. You got a bunch of warring fiefdoms and all of this and that and neighbors who aren't that happy with you. Listen, we will provide you with military protection, but here's the deal. You're going to continue to sell your oil, but you will only settle that in dollars. And by the way, those dollars are actually mostly going to stay in the United States. So we engineered a petrodollar system, which meant that any country that wanted to buy oil was going to have to purchase that oil in dollars. Right, so they're priced in dollars, whether it's the Brent crude coming out of the North Sea in the UK, or it's U.S. oil, or it's oil coming out of Nigeria, all priced in dollars, and it's been that way for a long time. And that really gave the United States an extraordinary advantage. It meant that any country, Greece, they want to buy oil, Greece has got to have dollars. Well, where do you get dollars? You either run a positive trade balance with the U.S., or you have to run a positive trade balance with somebody else who's doing that with the U.S., or you have to borrow and be able to borrow in dollars. So it meant there was demand for dollars, and it's not a small number. Since 2000, the number of petrodollars that have accumulated in oil exporters' coffers is $7 trillion U.S. dollars. It's an amazing amount of money.
Wow.
And they didn't just hold on to those. Of course, they went and bought things like, you know, shares of U.S. companies and U.S. real estate and other assets around the world. But those $7 trillion represent a stock of dollars that are held offshore, in essence, by these oil-exporting nations. And that meant that the U.S. could basically print $7 trillion, send them overseas, and nothing bad happened, right? So it allowed us to run extraordinary trade imbalances, right? The U.S., if our trade imbalance, the negative trade balance, meaning we buy more than we sell, if that wasn't an economy, it would be, I think, the second or third largest economy in the world. It's just, it's a very large number. So
that's
the petrodollar system gave us.
Yeah, excellent. That's a great succinct background. I knew you'd have an answer for that. And most people, we don't think about the fact that the oil is really the basis for, when we say, you know, the dollar is the reserve currency of the world, that basically oil is the most sought-after commodity there is, and it's a big story. And now we turn to the fact that we, in our email that went out, our newsletter, Russ brought to light this article that came out from the Nikkei Asian Review September 1st that said, China sees new world order with oil benchmark backed by gold. So this would be a huge departure. This is China saying, we will settle oil in gold rather than, and back their currency backed by gold, and we can talk about that, rather than petrodollars.
This is really big. There have been a few countries in the past that have tried to price oil in something other than direct U.S. dollars, and every one of them has run into serious trouble with the United States as a consequence. Since the 1970s, oil is only settled in dollars. Well, with China saying they're going to have a futures contract that's now up and running where you can buy and sell and trade oil in yuan, which is their currency, and you can then take the yuan, and they opened up their capital accounts a little bit so that you could take those yuan if you're an oil exporter. I'm Nigeria. I sell oil to China. I have a bunch of yuan. I don't want them. What do I do with them? Well, you can wander over to the Shanghai Gold Exchange. You can exchange that for gold if you want and then take that with you. So they gave open convertibility, meaning oil for yuan for gold. They made that linkage, and that's a game changer because China is the world's largest importer of oil right now. That means that the largest importer of oil is now going to be pricing it in something other than dollars. It's amazing.
All right. Well, I think on that note, let's bring in Brian London. Brian's editor and publisher of the Gold Newsletter, knows a thing or two about precious metals, and also has the host of the longest-running investment conference in the U.S., a place we love to go every year, the New Orleans Investment Conference. Let's say hello to Mr. Brian London. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Robert, great to be with you, as always.
Yeah, well, when we want to pick the brain of someone who knows gold, it's definitely you. You know, it's kind of ironic, this story, because the very reason there was a petrodollar was because Nixon took us off the gold standard, and now China is realizing to attract folks to use the yuan, they have to make it convertible. One thing you've been talking about for a long time is that China has been stockpiling gold for some time. Can you speak to that?
Well, exactly. What China's doing with this gold, with this oil contract, is basically borrowing from the credibility of gold to give the yuan some credibility. People, or traders around the world, are still a bit nervous about pricing oil or getting stuck in the yuan if they buy or trade oil. And like Chris alluded to, the capital controls, getting money out of China is an issue as well. So by allowing convertibility into gold, they're essentially backing the yuan by gold. It's still not quite yet a gold standard in any respect, because gold is still priced in dollars. So there still has to be that exchange done to determine how much gold will be delivered via the contract. But the important point here is that China is using gold. China is not only the world's largest producer of gold through its many mines, it's also the world's largest consumer. And what really irks the Chinese, amongst many other things, is the fact that gold is valued every day by a bunch of Western traders trading paper gold on the COMEX and other Western exchanges. And they, as the largest producer and the largest consumer, simply have had no say in the pricing of gold. They want that to end. They want to take their place among the great nations of the world, alongside the U.S., alongside the other Western powers, economically and, of course, militarily as well. So this is just one facet of a long-term plan they have to take their seat at amongst the world's great powers, if not to eventually lead the world's great powers. One of the things about gold is that China and gold, is that they've been buying gold. They've been building their gold reserves. No one really knows how much gold they have. They reported that it's only about 1,500 tons. Most people believe it's over 4,000 tons of gold in their official reserves. And, of course, one of the things that escapes a lot of people is that China has been encouraging its citizens to own gold for many years now, and at record levels since 2013. And for China, in a nation where there is essentially no such thing as private property, gold in the hands of its citizens is essentially the same as national gold reserves. So the amount of metal that's within China's borders right now and is not allowed to leave is tremendous. China alone, on an annual basis, consumes the vast majority of all the gold produced or mined in the world today. So it's extremely important for the nation, historically, culturally, monetarily, and as a key cog in their plan to improve and to establish their seat amongst the world's great economic powers.
Well, this article came out September 1st, and just 6 days later, Venezuela came out and said that they will shun the U.S. dollar in favor of the yuan. And I'm sure they're not the last. Folks are definitely in the same boat in terms of saying the U.S. dollar has too much power, and the yuan may not be the strongest currency around, but if I could settle in gold, that changes everything.
It does, and it's a sign, I think, an important sign, not so much of China's growing power, but of the U.S.'s diminishing power across the world. You know, the U.S. or the dollar became the international reserve currency after World War II, when the U.S. emerged from that conflict as the world's dominant military power. Historically and traditionally, that's been the determinant of what currency is the international reserve currency. Throughout the 1800s and early 1900s, of course, it was Great Britain. But the U.S. took over that role following World War II. However, the Bretton Woods system still tied the dollar to gold. And as the U.S. started to outspend and create debt and live beyond its means, that ratio of the dollar to gold got out of whack in a real-world basis. And it essentially forced the U.S., forced Nixon in 1971 to sever the last ties of gold convertibility to the dollar. Since then, the U.S. has been enabled or allowed to print dollars without restraint, without any corresponding tie to the dollar or anything else. They've been able to outspend our means and create a monstrous debt load that eventually necessitates a far higher gold price.
You know, to add to the story, right, September 12th, the federal government of the United States announces that the national debt had finally broken the inevitable $20 trillion mark. So how strong can your currency be when your debt is a lot bigger than your output? I mean, I think that's kind of a bigger discussion. You know, there's a lot of trends that we're watching and all need to be paying attention to. We're not saying this is the only trend to watch, but if you're a real estate investor, the dollar is important to you. Most real estate around the world is settled in U.S. dollars, and again, because it kind of is the strongest currency from a trade point of view, if you have U.S. dollars, you know you can always get something for them. And I think, as we've seen, not everybody feels the same way about other currencies, but as soon as you throw gold in the mix, now you have their attention. So, Chris, I know you've been studying this story as well, and in addition to energy, you do pay attention to the metals and so forth, I know, and just as part of the, you know, economy. What's your take on all this?
Well, I think that everybody needs to understand that where we are in this story right now, I think there's only one question to be resolved, and it's the title of a piece that I just wrote that went up on my website recently. It's on my public blog, and it's called Who's Going to Eat the Losses?
Right.
Because if you just take a step back and you say, wait a minute, it's not just the $20 trillion in debt. People like to look at that number. But let's look at all the debt on corporate debt, household debt, state and municipal, unfunded pensions, unfunded entitlement. You add it all up. And the number is actually something well north of $100 trillion. It's actually closing in on $200 trillion of unfunded stuff. Right? So the if you look at it that way, it's very clear we're not going to pay all of that back. Well, we might, but it will be with dollars that are so heavily debased that, you know, a cup of coffee is $600, right?
Right.
But one way or the other, people in the future discover that they're not getting what they thought they were going to get. That's called a loss. And so what's really the battle that's shaping up is who's going to eat the losses. The big banks are maneuvering like crazy with bail-in laws and with, you know, rule changes and all of this stuff to make sure they're not the ones eating the losses, but somebody's going to have to. And so once you understand that, that begins to inform my position of why I like gold. And it's simply because you can't make it out of thin air. It takes a lot of energy to produce it. It's been money for a very long time. All the traditional reasons I'm sure your listeners are very familiar with, I just look at it and I say, we are mismanaging our paper money system so badly, and we were making promises that can't possibly be kept. You know, there's nobody. I was talking with the former executive director of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corps, a really smart guy named Bradley Belt, and I showed him a chart of the total indebtedness, and I said, how do we get out of this, Brad? What do we do? And he said, rapid growth. It's the only thing that could possibly work. Well, then you wander over and you say, well, we haven't had rapid growth, GDP, in the United States for over 12 years, and there's no story that says here's where it's going to come from. And you have a central bank that said, well, we'll fix this with inflation. Well, you know, once you look at it that way, they've basically admitted when the central bank is telling you we're going to fix this by ruining your currency. Slowly, they hope, but sometimes it gets away from them and goes a little quicker than they want. But one way or the other, they're saying, we're going to do this by stealing purchasing power from everybody, and that's how we're going to balance the books. Well, excuse me if I'm not super excited by that plan, and I think that gold represents a way to sidestep that plan, and that's been my strategy for a while now. And I wish there was a more positive case to be made out of this, but every single administration has said the same thing. We're going to kick the can down the road. Yeah, I think Brian would agree with me, but not to put words in his mouth. But you can't do that forever,
Chris, I can't agree with you anymore. And I think it's important to realize that this is nothing new. Throughout 4,000 years of human history, whenever a civilization has gotten ahead of itself, has spent beyond its means, has created unmanageable debts, it has always reserved to debasing the currency, even when that currency was based upon gold and silver, which, of course, in antiquity, just about every currency was. They would debase the currency. They would clip the edges around the gold coins. They would alloy it with cheaper metals, but they would make the coin of the realm less valuable. It is the age-old, most effective, and always resorted to method of depreciating debt, and it's going to happen today. Today we have a civilization that is global. We have every developed nation that has created monstrously large debts. In the U.S. alone, as Robert just mentioned, the debt's $20 trillion. Well, what a lot of people don't realize is that the federal debt has roughly doubled under every two-term president in recent decades. So that means by the time that Donald Trump serve a second term, by the time he's out of office, the federal debt will be approaching $40 trillion. What this means is that the dollar, and not only the dollar, but every world fiat currency has to be depreciated because the value, the cost of those debts has to be devalued. There's no way we can grow our way out of it. There's no way we can raise taxes to fund those debts. There's no way that we can cut spending practically to handle those kinds of debt loads. The dollar and other world currencies have to depreciate, and that's just what they're doing right now. They're in a race to the bottom of the hill. Every now and then, one currency gets ahead of the others in the race. Right now, the dollar is winning the race to the bottom of the hill. But they're all going in the same direction, and when every currency has to be depreciated, there's only one thing left that they can depreciate against: gold, and essentially all tangible assets. That also works for real estate. It also works for silver and other commodities. But it's these things that will retain their relative value as paper currencies are depreciated. And it has to happen now.
Yeah, that's why we're such big fans of, you know, what we call real assets, things that are tangible, mm-hmm. that are real, that aren't just paper. And I mean, there's some great paper investments for sure, but you just have to understand what side you're on and what's happening in the bigger picture. I think from a gold perspective, you know, so many folks don't really understand gold, or they hear things like, well, the dollar is strong. But to your point, it's strong because it's winning the race down the hill. It's strong compared to other terribly weak fiat currencies. What about this yuan story? I mean, isn't that basically saying that the yuan will now be gold-backed if I can take those yuans and trade them for gold? Or is that just the yuan I settle oil in?
I think it's the first step. It's the first salvo by China. Because gold is still internationally priced in dollars, it's not fully backed by gold. They still have to make that conversion into dollars to then determine how much gold is paid off on that contract. But it is a sign, and it is important as a sign of China's first significant step in trying to dethrone the dollar as the world's international currency. And as Chris alluded to earlier, once that happens, the U.S. can no longer export its inflation. Most U.S. $100 bills, for example, the vast majority are overseas. Once the U.S. loses its ability to export its inflation, all those dollars are coming home and flooding the U.S. economy. And then you'll see inflation rates that will rival anything we saw in the 1970s.
All right, good stuff. Well, Russell Gray's been pretty quiet through all this, so I think it's time we bring in the co-host of the Real Estate Guys radio program. Russell Gray, what say you?
Well, first of all, guys, thanks so much for just doing the call, because I've been, as you know, watching this story since 2010 when 2009, when China and Russia first got together and said, hey, we want to throw off the dollar. We want to get out from underneath the U.S. thumb. And so, you know, we were coming out of the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, which was brutal on me personally because I didn't understand how to see the big pictures. I couldn't see the storm clouds forming on the horizon. I was there standing at the beach, you know, with my back to the wave when it came. And so Robert and I spent a lot of our time and effort helping our listeners understand how to look at things through a bigger picture. So really appreciate you guys just continuing to be available to us and help us understand these things. I think that, Robert, you made a great point about how up to this point, people are saying the world, this time it's different. And they're saying this time it's different because it's all fiat. There's no alternative. And the reason to me that this story is so huge, to Brian's point, is that it is the first step, and it's really not the first step, it's just the most recent step in a 7-year plan that China has been working on to establish itself and really supplant the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency. It started out in the beginning with them saying, hey, this deal with Russia, it's not really anything about the dollar, we just want a little bit more flexibility, but they've become more emboldened over time, and now they're overtly out there. I mean, it's in their press. You can see our intention is to take away the reserve status of the dollar. And of course, the petrodollar thing is really, as you guys mentioned earlier, a big part of the story. So for me, this has to do with, you know, from a real estate perspective, this has to do with interest rates. You mentioned, Brian, at the end there that the in the 70s, we had that inflation. Well, you know, Reagan came into office, I think, in 1980, and Paul Volcker, the then Fed chairman, you know, they got together and said, look, we've got to reestablish the dollar because people have abandoned the dollar. Gold went from $35 an ounce to $850 or something like that, and the dollar was crashing. Oil was going up, and we were told that it was because we were going to be running out of oil by the year 2000, like that ever happened. And so oil and the dollar and gold and interest rates have all been intertwined for the last 40 years that I can remember. And this is the first time since the U.S. dollar was allegedly backed by gold under Bretton Woods prior to 1971, where the world is looking at having a choice between a fiat currency and something backed by something that's real. So to me, that's huge. Now, if that starts to have the impact on the dollar that we all suspect it will, and that those dollars come back to the U.S. with a vengeance, then the only thing I think that could be done would be interest rates would have to rise. But we had interest rates at 20-plus percent in the 70s when we were the nation or the world's largest creditor, not debtor, and we had a manufacturing economy. We actually produced stuff and exported. Today, that's not the case. I mean, we're spending nearly $500 billion a year just in interest expense, and the interest rate is like 1.5%. What's it going to be like if it's 10? I mean, it's going to be devastating. So I think Americans who are denominating their wealth in dollars, you can't change what's happening at the macro level. I think, you know, what we have to think about is what can we do? I mean, I'm a big fan of real estate because, A, it's real, which means that if there's inflation, it tends to benefit. You know, B, it's essential. It's not like people can just opt out of real estate because, it's too hard. I mean, even in the 70s with high interest rates, people were still finding ways to buy properties. I mean, you need a place to live, conduct your business or whatever. And the other thing about real estate, especially right now, is it gives you the opportunity to acquire it with future dollars. And it's a pretty safe bet that the future dollars you're going to use to pay back are going to be less. In other words, you can use debt on real estate to short the dollar. And so I just think there's a lot of opportunity. I mean, I don't want this to be a doom and gloom call. I think there's a ton of opportunity here for people who understand what's happening and understand how to take advantage of what's going on. But, you know, what you can't afford to do is be ignorant about it. So I think that we've got a season where we have available debt, we have low interest rates, the dollar is still valuable, relatively speaking, and if we think it's going to be worth less down the road, you've got to find a way to short it. Gold is a way to do that, to hedge against a falling dollar, and I think that's very, very important. But, you know, the old ding against gold is it doesn't provide a yield. But real estate will. So to me, I think there's a lot of opportunity here. I think it's a story that every serious investor, especially serious real estate investors, need to be paying attention to. This is not over. We're certainly not going to figure it all out here on this call together. I mean, this is just another step. But I'm looking forward to the New Orleans conference, Brian. I'm so happy that you continue to put that thing on. Chris, I know you're going to be there. We're going to be there. Robert Kiyosaki is going to be there. It's going to be great. I can't wait to hear what everybody is seeing and thinking from their different perspectives.
Yeah. So, and Russ, I think with your closing point there, that this is really an opportunity that is vitally important. I don't want to leave in people's minds that it's all doom and gloom. We've been through this before, especially in gold. And, of course, you guys in real estate But we've been through these cycles before, and we've been through rising metals prices. And right now, gold and silver have, from a technical basis, established new bull markets, new runs, new rallies. They've broken out from major downtrend lines. And when this has happened before, in the cycles that I've been involved in before, we've seen tremendous gains not only in the metals but in mining stocks that leverage these gains. We've seen recommendations at the New Orleans Investment Conference that multiply 3-4, even as much as 10 or 20 times in value in some cases, following their recommendation at the conference. So this is a world of opportunity, and what we're trying to do with this year's event is approach it from all angles, look at all of the trends, and then give practical advice, practical strategies, and specific recommendations on how you can not only prepare to preserve your wealth, but also build it in ways that are really possible, from real estate to metals to energy to even equities, broad equity markets. So it really is an exciting time to be an investor. There are real risks facing us right now, but there are real possibilities that rarely come around in our investing lifetimes, and this is the time to take advantage of them.
Well, I think Chris hit on something that was really important. You know, he talked about, his exact words, and Chris, you know, correct me if I'm not capturing this right, but at the end of the day, this is going to end up being a gigantic wealth transfer. Mm-hmm. This is what happens, because who's going to eat the losses? Well, you know, that's a transfer of wealth to a degree. And so the question is, A, you don't want it to be you that eats the losses, but you know, anytime there are losses, there's, you know, in a winners and losers scenario, there's a chance to be a winner. And the key is how do you figure out where that's going to be and how to position yourself? So
that's exactly right. And you need to turn around and you need to look at the wave that's coming. And there's another wave coming. You know, I shake my fist, you know, futilely at the central banks of the world, because they've really gotten us into an extraordinary pickle. It's going to be very painful when we have to get out of it. I call it the everything bubble. And so, you know, to understand these markets is really important. This isn't a time where you can sort of go on tried and true and for better or worse, your traditional broker may not be the right source of information. You really have to be curious. You got to look around, and you got to be willing to face it as it is, because these are extraordinary times. Nobody's ever lived through a period of asset inflation as large as the one we're in. All the world's central banks have taken a collective bet. It's binary. It either works or it doesn't. If it works, great, I guess. If it doesn't, it's going to be really awful. And that's for the unaware. The other side of this, though, you know, these are dangerous markets. You know, we have a webinar that we're running with Grant Williams and Lance Roberts, people I trust to sort of who are willing to look at things as they are, right? Not as we want them to be, but certainly, you know, with an eye to reality. And to Brian's point, you know, there's extraordinary risk here, but that means there's opportunity as well. And you know, Brian can certainly speak more to the opportunities in the gold and the silver shares and all of that. For my end, I will tell you that this is approaching one of the most extraordinary periods of time to invest in energy, oil specifically. There's a large story around that. You just have to back up and look at it and realize that in the last 3 years, going on 4 years, we've seen the most historic collapse in worldwide investment spending by oil companies, and you have to spend a lot of money in that business to get new oil out of the ground. You got to find it. You got to develop the fields. You got to do all that. And that hasn't happened. So we can just sort of, it's a slow-moving beast, you know, the oil business, but it's got about a 4 to 5 year lag on these things. So we can just say, wow, we didn't spend money here. Cast forward 4 or 5 years, there's not going to be oil there. So, again, that's another big piece of analysis that I think people can wrap their heads around. But oil is the master commodity. No oil, I'm sorry, you don't get to do anything else, including alternative energy, mining, all kinds of stuff. If you have oil, great. So I think there's an extraordinary period of time to get involved in that, but you got to look past the headlines. And a lot of what's in the shale sector right now, I hate to say it, really clever engineering, wonderful people. I know a bunch of really smart people in that business, and they are saddled up to their eyeballs in debt. And so you got to be smart there too. And that's where something like the New Orleans Investor Conference comes in. You know, you got to, it's due diligence matters. You got to know the story. You got to see the big picture, and then you got to pick smart when you're deciding where exactly you're going to be investing. Same as real estate, I'm sure.
Well, Well, of course, Brian, the history of the conference is a resource conference, metals and mining and oil and gas and all of that. We consider real estate kind of the ultimate resource in that regard. All those things have to do with real estate. And the conference is in its 43rd year. Again, if you'll send an email at the end of the call here, we'll capture all of the notes from the various things we've talked about. If you want to be sure to get hooked up to the Dangerous Markets webinar that Chris has, if you want to get invited to the New Orleans Investment Conference, all you do is send an email to prepare@realestateguysradio.com, prepare@realestateguysradio.com. We'll let you know how you can sign up for that and how you can get on the list for the 2018 Investor Summit at Sea. Very happy to say that Brian and Chris will both be returning for next year's summit. It's not available yet. We aren't taking registrations. We will be soon, and that will all be outlined in the email as well. But the conference is extraordinary. I think this is our sixth year at the in New Orleans Investment Conference. Not that many out of 43, Brian, but still, ever since we've come back every year. And what's great about it is it's not just what you hear from the front of the stage. It's the conversations you get in after the presentations. Really smart people come to this event. Investors who don't think like everybody else. They aren't just throw it in a mutual fund and forget it investors. Brian, talk about the kind of folks that we'll meet when we show up at the conference.
You know, Robert, that's something, I'm glad you brought that up. That's something I stress every year when I open the conference. I tell the attendees, look around you. You're looking at some of the smartest people, smartest investors in the world today are sitting in front of you, behind you, at either side. Take the time to talk to these people. And we've had lifelong friendships made at the conference. People keep in touch throughout the year. They gather every year here in New Orleans. But they really are some of the most successful, savvy, sophisticated investors that you'll ever run across. And it's an incubator of ideas. You'll share thoughts. You'll share views. You'll talk about the presentations you've seen. And it's this sharing of ideas that's immensely valuable. It's really one of the unsung attributes of the New Orleans Conference. And in addition to that, our speakers take the time to mingle with all of the attendees. You know, I obviously can't promise this because there are so many factors involved, but I can tell you that attendees do have the chance to mingle and take pictures with people like Charles Krauthammer, Dennis Gartman. We have Tucker Carlson this year. We have Robert Kiyosaki, who is, as you guys know, just loves to talk to people and actually be in the audience taking notes during presentations. So you get to mingle and meet these people, and it's just a wonderful experience that cannot be explained. You have to really be there to experience it, to really, really understand it.
Absolutely, and we'll take it one step further, which is for our listeners on Friday night, we're going to have a little reception and enjoy some time together with many of our friends, and a lot of the folks you just mentioned will be invited. Again, we can't control whether they come or not, but I'll tell you, we usually draw a pretty good crowd, so if you do come to the New Orleans Investment Conference, and we certainly would recommend that you do, make sure that you come up and say hello to the Real Estate Guys and all our friends at our hospitality suite. Again, you get those details when you send in your email to prepare@realestateguysradio.com. And I think before we're done, this whole idea of preparing in advance, I mean, it's the Boy Scout motto, be prepared. The time to repair the roof is when the sun is shining. One of the most amazing resources I've ever seen is Chris's The Crash Course. It is a in-depth, very long, very detailed video course. It's completely free. Chris, talk about The Crash Course.
Well, sure. It was something that just sort of popped out of me. It took a lot of it's probably the hardest work I've ever done in my life, and I made it freely available. The long form has 28 chapters now. We keep updating them, and that's a big commitment of time, almost a little 4.5 hours. And then we have an accelerated crash course. You could Google that, find it very quick. That'll take you just about 50 minutes, and it puts the three E's together. A lot of people say it opens their eyes, doesn't tell them anything they didn't know, but makes it easily accessible. I've had artists to financiers tell me they found it equally valuable and understandable.
Yeah, great stuff. I know when you spoke at our Investor Summit this year, the first time that those folks had got a chance to hear you and Adam speak, it definitely opened some minds and some great conversations. And really, that's what this is about. This isn't designed to provide answers as much as just to continue to ask the questions. And we thought that given everything where it stands today, it'd be great to get your take on it, Chris and Brian, and we sure appreciate you guys. Any closing remarks anybody has as far as what does an investor do in the light of all this we've been discussing?
Well, from my point of view, I think investors need to have some core holding in gold and silver and look into the area, educate themselves in the area. Obviously, New Orleans Conference is a great place to start. We also have a free special report called The Investor's Guide to Gold and Silver. I'll send you guys the link to that. It's just something that people can download. It's a 30-page report that gives all of the basics and an objective view and recommendations of every publication out there in the sector and the major conferences that people can attend.
Excellent. Good stuff. Chris, what say you?
Well, Peak Prosperity, we have three big words we operate around. One is learn, the second is do, and the third is be. And all of this is sort of encapsulated in Prosper, where we say, look, go out and learn everything you need to learn. Go to the investment conference, watch the crash course, read, talk to people, do all of that. None of that's useful unless you're going to do something with that information. So what do you do? And with Prosper, we say, yes, financial preparation, very important. But that's one form of capital. There are seven other forms of capital that if you're rich in those, you will not only have a great life today, but you'll be more resilient for whatever future comes. And so that's something we really promote people should be doing. And then the last part is B. This is really important time that we're living through right now. And we really ask people, it's time to bring our best selves to the story. It's really time to understand that the world needs our gifts. And so it's really a call to action on a very deep level. That's we put all of that in one spot and we say, hey, really exciting times to be alive, but you got to understand what the game is and make sure you're in it.
Such a great point. I think it's part of why we get along so well, our motto forever, education for effective action. If you just hang up the phone and go, man, this was interesting to listen to, you'll get one set of results. If you take action, it'll be completely different than that. Russ Gray, put a cherry on it.
Hey, so a couple things that I think. One is I want to toss in our real asset report. I think it chronicles the whole move of China from the very beginning, and I think that that's something that everybody wants to be paying attention to. Chris, one of those forms of capital you talk about is relationship capital. I don't exactly know what word you use, but Robert and I spent a ton of time both promoting events like the New Orleans Conference and putting together events like the Summit at Sea to give people like all of us a chance to get together, you know, thought leaders, if you will. We love to hang out with guys like you that are big brains, and then lots of real-world investors who are out there. So we talked about how that happens at New Orleans, happens at the Summit. I think that one is just really important. Don't think that you can just sit at home in the comfort of your, you know, office and be on your TV or your phone or your computer and that you're going to get everything you need. You've got to have personal relationships with people. You've got to get in real-time conversations. And so, you know, we're going to do the party to get people together. We're going to go to the New Orleans Investment Conference to get people together. I think that's super important. And the other thing is, I think, as you're looking at the what I consider the mainstream news, and a lot of it, I don't know that I'm going to use the term fake, but there's a lot of spin, and I think there's a lot of things that get left out that are going on underneath. You know, if you take a look at what happened in Libya, for example, that had some gold behind it. You look at some of the stuff that's gone on in Venezuela, gold was involved in that. People tell you that gold doesn't matter in world economics, but it really is fundamental to world economics. And so you have to understand gold if you really want to understand what's going on. And right alongside that is oil. And it isn't just for understanding what's going on geopolitically. It's also for understanding what's going on macroeconomically and how that's going to trickle down to you, whether it's interest rates, whether it's the opportunity to invest, as Chris was talking about, in oil, or as Brian was talking about, gold or mining shares, or as we talk about, using real estate as a way to short the dollar and benefit from inflation. And there's just a lot to learn. So I hope that people aren't feeling like, oh, my God, this is so overwhelming. It's really quite interesting, and it can be a ton of fun. We have a lot of fun doing this. I don't think any of us are negative or scared. I think we're excited, maybe a little apprehensive, because you never quite know how it's going to break, and you're just trying to stay alert so that when the opportunity comes, you can move. But it all starts with being educated, being connected, and just being prepared. So prepare at realestateguysradio.com, and that'll get you all the details of today's call.
We can't control the future, any of us, but if we prepare for a lot of different eventualities, we'll be no worse off, and it doesn't take that much work. I will tell you this, Chris, since coming back from the summit and spending time with you and Adam, my wife and I are infinitely more prepared than we were. We read Prosper before the summit. We spent time with you guys. We're like, these guys got it figured out, and there's a ton of great things and easy things you can do today, but they're easy to do. They're easy not to do. We would say, if in doubt, do so you can be. Big thanks to Chris Martinson and Brian London for being on the call today. Again, if you'd like all the resources we talked about and links to those things, all you have to do is send an email to prepare@realestateguysradio.com. We'll tell you how you can get a hold of the Crash Course and Prosper, the Dangerous Markets webinar, the New Orleans Investment Conference and the party there, the Gold and Silver Guide, the Real Asset Report, and, of course, next year's Summit at Sea. Thank you, gentlemen, and thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you guys on the radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.